You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good. You sound clear. It sounds good.
Okay, good.
So, well, thanks for doing the call. Thanks for doing an interview. So, I guess we'll just start, you know. So, your book is exciting. So, I remember when I was a kid, like back in 1870, when I was young, there was a book called A Walk Across America by Peter Jenkins. Have you ever seen that?
Uh-uh.
Or heard of it?
No.
Okay. So this guy back in 1973, he walked, not quite coast to coast, but walked across America. And when I saw your book, it really reminded me of that. Because when I was a little kid, I saw that book, my mom was reading it, and I was just so inspired by the idea of walking across America. And then this other guy wrote a book, like Letters from the Breakdown Lane. He ran across America. And
yeah, I heard about that guy.
Yeah, and he did it before there were GPSs and such, and you realize, God, what a pain in the ass, you know? All he had was maps. Didn't know how far he'd gone in a day or when the next city or hotel was. So quite challenging. So I guess I'd ask, you know, so who hasn't wanted to walk across America? And I guess the first question is what, and I have read your book, of course, but what was the drive to walk across America? I mean, I know you kind of start out in the book talking about that, but what happened? What was the straw that broke the camel's back and got and you said, the heck with it, I'm gonna walk across this country?
You know, I actually have a lot of answers to that question, so you might get a handful.
That's fine, just blast them out. Yeah,
well, it was something that I'd always wanted to do, but I never actually thought that I would do it. But, you know, after I lost everything, I became really depressed. And I guess just to get my mind out of the funk that I was in, I began walking a lot. And, you know, I started walking around the neighborhood. And then eventually I started walking between the towns. I don't know. I started to feel better and decided that I would just keep going. But like I said, there's more than just one answer to that question. You know how like some countries have these different rituals that they'll do before they are accepted as an adult?
Oh yeah, definitely. The for men and women it was different, but yeah, especially for men there was the initiation into manhood, which was always it could be mild or quite extreme historically. Yeah,
I think at least subconsciously that was something that I felt that I needed to do, well, basically to become a man, at least to myself. And you know, like, I was in the army, and a lot of people join the military to find that satisfaction. But I guess that just wasn't enough for me. I mean, it was just a job to me, and I guess I just needed something more.
Yeah, and some people have no notion of that transition. They don't have it. I mean, I know when I joined the military, it was, you know, to become a man. That's at least what my, you know, I came from a military family, so it's kind of expected. I didn't have to, but it was, I didn't know what else to do. And, you know, I was looking to, you know, grow up, become a man. And I'd say that the military, I don't know, you know, can that really do it for you? I'd give it a maybe. It depends, you know, it may not. It depends on the individual. Will it actually work for them? What branch are you in? What happened? You know, I would say it got me started, but it did not complete the process, that's for sure.
Yeah, and we don't really have that, well, we don't have actual initiations into adulthood in America. So we have to kind of go out and find that on our own.
Yeah, there's there's a video series I must listen to, I don't know, 30 times, 50 times over the years, especially when I was younger. Joseph Campbell, The Power of Myth, the interview with interview series with Bill Moyers, and he talks a lot about the hero's journey, and then also he talks about the initiation into manhood for men. And so historically it has been absolutely a part of cultures, and now it doesn't exist, and you can see it. I mean, especially with men, you can see, well, yeah, there's a transition that never happened. You know, it's like so many people, they kind of stay teenagers their whole lives. It's why I often wonder if it isn't why in Hollywood, what is it about movies and TV shows about high school? You know, it's like it's
they're stuck.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people are. Because I mean, to them they go, "Oh, I can totally relate to this." Yeah, I remember this is because that's where their head still is. And so, to deliberately say, "I need to get rid of this," it's a good thing. And not enough people have any notion that transition exists.
It does, though.
It does. And so, as you started to walk, like I would say, did you find that transition as you were walking? I'd say, like, you know, who started it and who finished it?
You mean, like, did I find myself?
Yeah. I mean, I know there was a trend. I mean, I know you definitely changed throughout. You had a lot of experiences, but I'd say, yeah, who started and then who finished? Like, what was the difference between those two people?
Well, when I started out, it felt like I was going in blindfolded. You know, I had a really positive outlook on it, and I think I had my expectations set just a little too high. Like, for everything to go smoothly and the whole experience to be a joyous occasion. And things started to get rough pretty quick, and it tore me down. It actually got to me so bad that I gave up at my halfway point and went back to my hometown. I wasn't there for too long before I got back at it, though. I felt like I had a good taste for it. The first attempt had opened my eyes quite a bit, and it wasn't so hard to accept everything as they came during my second attempt, which I did complete. I actually had a lot more fun then, too. I was living day to day. I expected everything to be erratic. That's just how it is, and you have to get used to it. It was like having multiple days in a single day. So many things would happen. Something terrible would happen, and 5 minutes later, something amazing would happen. It would just do that all day long, and once you accept that, it gets pretty easy. But I think it makes you a little crazy, too. I wasn't expecting all of that when I started, so I think it toughened me up, physically and mentally. It's just something you'd have to do for yourself to understand the change it has on you.
Yeah. Did you ever get the feeling when you were, especially walking across maybe a state like, I remember you wrote about Arizona, and that's where, you know, we're at here in Arizona. Like, when you were walking across a state like Arizona or, gosh, like
Nevada?
Nevada, yeah. Different states that have just vast expanses of nothing. Well, it's beautiful. It's nature. But did you ever get that feeling of just absolute aloneness and wondering, you know, what have I done? And nobody gives a crap anyway. I mean, it feels like you're hanging on the side of a cliff or something.
Yeah, that was actually the icing on the cake. I mean, I loved it. You know, I had a bike up until Nevada, actually. So I sold my bike when I was in Utah. And I wanted to walk across the loneliest highway through Nevada because I knew that it would be a challenge and I wanted it. And it was really hard out there. Like it was like walking on Mars, man. It was totally bizarre. And if you didn't walk, if you didn't do it, then you died. I mean, it was that simple. And you had to make it between towns, because if you found any water out there, you couldn't drink it, because all of the water out there is just contaminated by mercury. As difficult as it was, I loved it. However, I definitely wouldn't recommend it unless you were an experienced hiker or just really crazy. Because I don't know anyone personally who has walked across Nevada with a backpack. I know a few people who have done it with like push carts, but with a backpack, it was just something else. And you know, I walked for days at a time just to make sure that I survived.
How many days did it take to get across Nevada?
I don't really remember.
Was it a couple weeks? Was it like a week, 2 weeks or so? Or
Maybe close to 3 weeks. I mean, I flew through there pretty quick. You know, like I said, I was walking day and night. I would walk from sun up to sundown. And I was doing, you know, 50 miles within that time. So if you're adding the fact that I'm walking at night too, well, that's, you know, 100 miles by the time the sun comes back up. And, you know, I kept doing that. And I only took a few hours for a break.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the bike and that you ditched it before, like right when you started Nevada, because it's funny, when I was reading the book, I know you mentioned it, but somewhere I missed like where the bike got lost, like where it went away, and then you just mentioned you were walking, and I thought, well, what? Anyway, sometimes when you're cruising through, it's easy to miss a little piece like that. I'm like, wait a second, he had this nice bike, and now he's walking. Like, what? I don't know. Whatever. Walking's good enough for me. You're walking. There was it's a book by, I saw on your Facebook, there was a picture where your book was next to, I think somebody else posted it on your feed, where there's a couple of books, but one was Sebastian Younger's book, Tribe, and then also there was your book, and something that, you know, Sebastian Younger wrote about a lot in the book Tribe, you know, for people, it's kind of about PTSD, other things too, but it's that, when we're in the military, we have this tribe, we have this, you know, close-knit family. Then you get out of the military, and his take on it is a lot of PTSD is caused because you no longer have that tribe.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like when you were walking across, you had your social media following, you had your blog, and it seems like that sort of became a bit of a
new tribe.
Yeah, a new tribe, because you got a lot of, like, can you speak about, like, just the help you got from people? It seemed like right at the perfect time, somebody showed up who was, you know, following you on your blog. They realized you were nearby, and they just went looking for you.
Yeah, everyone that was following my page and the people that helped me along the way, they all did a lot more than they realized. I wasn't in a very good state of mind half the time. I would get on my Facebook page, and it felt kind of like I had a family of people who actually cared about me. And that in itself gave me something else to think about, too. It was almost like being an entertainer. You have to put on a front to live in those shoes, but it came back to me in a positive way. You know, I looked really happy, but I was usually faking it to make other people feel good. It was kind of a big deal, though, because people saw that you can be happy with little to nothing. And it came back around to me, though, because it honestly made me happy to give people that sense.
No, I get it. So you're doing an audio version of the book now. And I listened to the bit you have on Facebook, and it sounds good. So you're a good narrator. And I always like it when authors read their own books. There's always something kind of lame about people who, you know, I don't know, if I read a book and people wanted to hear it, I would read it, because there's just something, I don't know, I appreciate that you're actually reading it. The best authors, best people always do read their own stuff. And how's that coming? And then when that's available, how's that going to be released? Is it like Audible, or is it going to be a download for people, or?
It'll probably be finished in, I would say, about 2 weeks. And it'll be available across as many platforms as I can. I'll probably create about 1,000 CDs for the old timers, and then let the younger crew come in to download it from either me personally or from Audible or however else I have it out there.
I guess Amazon owns Audible now. They didn't used to, but now Amazon owns it, like everything else in the universe. it's like they own Whole Foods now, you know. It's like, yeah. And so,
yeah, that's why I want to put it across as many platforms as I can, because some people, they won't buy from Amazon just because, simply because they don't want to.
It's not a bad idea. Yeah. I mean, if you can get it on Amazon, like Audible, great. But if not, I mean, I know I started to try to avoid, you know, feeding the empire, you know, if at all possible.
Yeah, people will be able to pay me directly through PayPal, and I can email it to them, even though it's going to be a very large file, or they'll be able to download it from kind of an underground link that I'll provide when it's ready.
No, it makes sense. Well, yeah, I'm glad you're somewhat outside of the system, because it's like, I saw an article this morning where it said a growing number of young Americans are leaving desk jobs to farm, you know, and I just dig that. There was a while that I'm not working in technology now, but there was a while that I stopped working in technology when I was working in technology and just was an organic farmer for a while. So I think there's, in general, a disenchantment with the system, which of course is obvious, but so it's good to make things available outside of that. It's harder now, but it's going to pay off, I think. So you mentioned on Facebook that you, it's a funny parallel, because I kind of recently went through something similar, but not at all as extreme. But you mentioned on Facebook that you'd been, you know, kicking cancer's ass, you've been fighting it, and then also you're good to go now. So you went through a difficult treatment, and now you're free of it. And it's interesting how, you know, you kept it to yourself for a while.
Yeah, all the way to the end.
Yeah, and that's it.
Yeah, I never posted any pictures of myself. I never said anything about it, not even to my own family. I just kept it to myself for 3 months. That's how long the treatment lasted. But actually, I was feeling pretty bad about 3 months prior to treatment. And that's when I was working on my book. And I found out in the middle of writing my book that I was going to have to start treatment pretty soon. So I knew that I had to hurry up and get it finished, or I might not be able to.
Wow. Well, being a person who goes on these epic journeys of self-exploration, I mean, having, you know, a health scare like that, or something that we have to go through, I went through something, well, I can't even say similar. It was just, I had weird abdominal pains and ended up just being, kidney stones and a really nasty dual hernia, whatever they call that. Like, people say you can't feel kidney stones unless they're passing, and I'm just going to say bullshit. Yes, you can. Okay. And then the little hernia, I guess, was quite extreme. I had it for like 20 years, but it just started hurting and it was radiant pain. And so the first thing people think, oh my God, I've got colon cancer. So it was, you know, friggin' terrifying, but it ended up being just, you know, well, the hernia operation was friggin' painful, but it certainly wasn't cancer. So, I mean, those like near death experiences, those like health scares, I mean, like, as far as a journey into self-exploration, like figuring more out about life, I mean, how does that compare to walking across America? I mean, would you rather, I mean, is that even more of a journey? I mean, to me, it lasted a couple months where I was just freaked out trying to figure out what was going on. But I definitely came out of that with a, you know, a drive to live life like I never have, because you realize, like, you know, you don't have time. Like, what you didn't do today, you might never do.
Yeah, I felt like I'd had a good run, but there was still more that I could do if I stuck around. That's why I went ahead and followed through with the treatment. I almost told the doctor that I didn't want to, but the tumor hadn't moved into any of the blood vessels, so it was definitely worth a shot. But if you have liver cancer and it gets into the blood vessels, you're pretty much done for. But luckily, I caught it before then. I was just really tired, abnormally tired, and my blood work kept coming back looking funny. And thankfully, I was able to catch it at stage 1, and it's in remission now. It could come back, but I'm still coming down from the treatment. It's been about a month and I still feel crappy, but I have more plans coming up. I'm going to follow through with those Headstrong, and if the cancer comes back, then I'll just walk it off.
Oh, I like that you're going to walk it off. Wow. I have a feeling that very well might work, just walking it off. No kidding, you know.
Well, if it comes back, there's really nothing I can do anyways. I'm just push myself as far as I can.
Yeah, that's a good way to live. I mean, so since you have, you know, like Carlos Castaneda in all the like stories of Don Juan books, he talked about how death walks right next to us all the time. It's like right next to our left shoulder, like 2 or 3 feet away, and it can reach over and just tap you at any time, and then it's over. And we all live like that's not the case, but death is actually that close. So, you know, I mean, do you feel different? Like you kind of have that reminder to live now?
Well, in the middle of treatment, I was pretty sure that I was going to die. I was just lying there in unbearable pain for about 3 weeks. And it felt like my body was shutting down. And when I first started feeling that bad, it was scary. But as time went on, I began to accept it. And that's a strange feeling in itself. I mean, I felt that way in the military. You know, you kind of put that in the back of your mind and you don't really think about it. But this was just completely different. I mean, I made it through, but I'm still kind of in a weird state of mind about it.
About the treatment?
Yeah, about the treatment and just feeling that close to death. I mean, my vitals were really off. My blood pressure was through the roof. I had a high fever. My heart rate was all over the place. I was dehydrated. I was having seizures. My body was rejecting food. My entire body, it just hurt like it had never hurt before. And even my mind was just going into another place too. You know, it was really scary.
Did you ever get a feeling of being like betrayed by your body? Because like you're in great shape. You're walking across America. I mean, really, it's like, I mean, what more can a person do? You know, you know what I mean? It seems like you start thinking like, what what the hell is going on? I mean, what's the point of trying when I get screwed over?
I thought it was just kind of ironic since I'd walked across America for St. Jude, but it gave me a better perspective of what they go through. You know, I've been super healthy my whole life, and then I was just hit out of nowhere by that debilitating pain. It made me feel closer to the people that I had previously helped. So it was ironic, but I felt kind of thankful for it in a way.
Yeah. So on your, I think it's the description of the book. Oh, I forget where I saw it. I've got it somewhere around here. But one of the things that is mentioned is that you had some mystical experiences on your walk. Like one story that sticks out to me is where like the Bible in the hotel room.
Yeah.
What kind of mystical, if you can fill us in on like any kind of a mystical experience you had on this, you know, journey, that just really, I don't know, that was just crazy. Like the Bible one's great, but if there's any other ones that just, like what blew your mind that happened? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had a lot of strange experiences during my travels, but something happened before I started and it almost seemed like it triggered a chain of events. I never mentioned that on my blog or in my book though.
Oh, definitely mention them here. Sounds great. Yeah. Fill us in. Interesting.
Well, I was out camping, and this was about a week before I was supposed to leave, and I went to sleep, but when I woke up, I had this memory of waking up in the middle of the night and seeing these three small kids walking around, and that just didn't make any sense because I was basically in the middle of nowhere, and I mean, there was no one out there. Well, it shouldn't have been. You know, I knew the area pretty well, and I've never seen anyone out there before. Anyway, a few days later, I was going through my phone when I noticed a video that was taken from that night, and I had no memory of it. Well, I played the video, and well, it was something. It was like something got a hold of my phone, and it was like whatever it was accidentally recorded a video of itself. I no longer have the actual video, but I have images from the video, because most of the video was blank. I mean, there were some strange noises going on, but as far as actually seeing something, there were just a few small glimpses here and there. So I made sure to save those.
Oh, wow. And did that somehow inspire the journey?
No, but I had similar things happen after I left. It felt like whatever it was I saw on my phone was following me during my travels. And it's weird that nothing like that has happened since I've finished.
Oh, no, it makes total sense to me. I would say that I've seen recently, actually, phones do such things. So the phone is a very good way to be contacted. So I don't think, no, it sounds just actually mundane to me. It's not even far out, because I've seen some unexplainable, crazy stuff with phones and, I guess you'd say, contact by either, lost relatives or...
just something else.
Exactly. And I've seen it. I've been there firsthand, and I've seen it. And, you know, all of us are... It isn't like we don't know how our phones work. It isn't like we, you know, could be confused. I mean, just outright things happen that are impossible. And so I'm glad that it did. I'm glad that it did, you know. And so we can go along for a little bit here. I'd ask, at this point, you know, is there going to be like Jake Does America 2? Are you going to get out there and walk again and document some journey? And what, at this point, since you've had you've had a walk across America, and then you've had, you know, a near-death experience, both transformative as crap, of course. What's next? But then also, what at this point have you picked up? Like, what sweetness of life have you experienced that you would, you know, inspire others with? Like, what did you get from these journeys that you could, you know, make the world a better place getting across? Along with your book, of course.
As far as what I'm going to do next, I've been juggling some ideas. I've thought about walking across America again. I've thought about hiking the AT. I've thought about hiking some other countries. I've even considered making a survival-based documentary, which is the most probable. I've been in contact with Fox and Lionsgate about a film crew, but I may end up doing that whole thing by myself. I mean, it would be nice to have a crew, though, because then, you know, there would be a fallback in case things go south. But, either way, whatever I choose to do, it's gonna happen pretty soon.
And then what year did you walk across America?
Well, I started the whole thing back in 2013.
Okay. So there's, you know, like with the emergency and such, I guess there is better technology today. I mean, there is, of course, cell phones, GPS, there's like the spot. You can just push the button, help, I'm injured, come save me. But still, yeah. The last chapter in your book, I've been just curious about, the last chapter in your book, it's called...
Dark Agenda.
Yes, Dark Agenda. And one thing I'd ask is, where did that last chapter, you know, title come from? And then you mentioned you're getting depressed again, so you want to start walking. And there was one paragraph that struck me in that last chapter where it says, some people will search for coping mechanisms their entire lives and never find what they're looking for. Luckily, I had found a healthy means of doing so. A lot of people turn to drugs or alcohol, and all I wanted to do was help raise money for charities. There's a little bit more of the chapter, but it's funny, like you end the book with a chapter called The Dark Agenda. Where'd that title, like, I don't know, somehow I just feel like there's just some meaning to that. Where did that last chapter title come from?
Because if you look back at the book as a whole, then you'll kind of get the idea that it is possible that I had this planned all the way from the beginning. I'm not going to say that I did, but it's definitely possible. Like, I could... but I knew that at some point I made it obvious that I was going to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. But it is possible that I knew well before I even brought the chapter up.
I get it. It's deep. You know, it's hard to express.
But you know, I didn't kill myself, obviously, which is what the dark agenda was. But when I got to the bridge, I was arrested and taken to the VA. I stayed there for about a week, and then I went back to the bridge, and I made it across, and then all of a sudden, my body just broke down, which was weird because I felt absolutely amazing up until then. It was like whatever it was that was driving me was just gone. So it wasn't just physical. It was just a very strange feeling.
And so, like, what was working on you with that, you know, communication through the phone, you know, before the trip started, it seems maybe it came back and just exhausted you and went, no, we got more plans for you. But I get it, the dark agenda, because, I mean, whenever anybody takes on their shit for real, especially somebody who's got, you know, demons, it's not easy. It's not pretty, you know, I'd say, especially, you know, myself being a veteran too, especially people who've been off to, you know, all the, you know, all the beautiful glamour that war offers and such like that, it can make you walk across America with a dark agenda. So, I mean, that you can get that out there, I think is important, because you walk across America and you go, okay, all right. I'm still not fixed. I'll walk across the other way, or maybe Africa. I can't stop walking.
Yeah. I love to exert myself. You know, that's kind of why I chose to join the army as an infantryman. But once I got out, I couldn't really find anything to match that. And then I got the opportunity to get as close to that as possible. So I took it. And, you know, even though I got depressed here and there, in the end, I realized how happy it actually made me. At least to have my mind set on something and completing it. That's a really good feeling. It just might take a little while to, you know, for it to soak in.
I get it. Well, when you have a plan or a mission or something that you just find interesting in life, to me, I don't know, what makes life worth living, what makes it fun, is just those projects we have that interest us. It doesn't matter if anybody else gets it. I mean, there's plenty of people who would say, like, that guy walking across America is just crazy. You know, they wouldn't get it. And along with, like, you know, like, endless interests we might have, like, you know, I've never made a bullwhip. I'm gonna look online. How do I make a bullwhip? Oh crap! I need a kangaroo hide. Oh, off to Australia I go. You know, and people might say, you went on a hunting trip to Australia to get a kangaroo hide to make a bullwhip, and you're like, you're like, yeah,
that's what life's about. You know, it's about having these little goals and making them. And when you run out of ideas, what is there?
Then death taps you on the shoulder and it's done.
Yeah.
So I'd ask, here's one. Like, so what advice would you offer to someone getting ready to walk across America? Somebody who goes, you know, that's what I want to do. I'm going to walk across America. I'm not much into making a bullwhip in Australia. I'd rather walk across America. Like, what, how about some pointers? Like, if they're getting started, I mean, since you've done it, I'm sure there's got to be some things you'd say, hey, here's something you might want to think about.
Well, that's kind of hard to answer because everyone's different. And what I tell them may not be the way they want to do it. And that's part of it. you know, whatever it is in life that you want to do, if you really want for it to be personal, you're going to have to do it your way. If someone asks me a particular question, then I'd be willing to give them a particular answer. But that doesn't mean my way is right or wrong. However, I think it may be wise to do a little bit of homework on basic survival skills and maybe look in different types of equipment that may suit your needs. But like I said, everyone's different. The only concrete advice that I can give is to let the experience sculpt you mentally. Don't have any expectations, because everyone will have bad days. There's just no escaping it. You know, I remember at one point I was at an intersection with a highway that would have led me straight back to my hometown, and I was feeling down on my luck, really, and I thought about just heading home because the opportunity was right there in front of me. But I shook my head and I just kept going west.
I get it. It's a great chapter title would be like, I shook my head and kept going west. I mean, that's I think maybe we all have to. That's something that, you know, a lot of people or everybody faces in life, you know, like doing what is right and doing what is easy, you know, shaking your head and going west, just to hell with it.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it went.
So this has been great. And I mean, I definitely would encourage people to get the book. And if there's anything else you'd like to add, anything at all that comes to mind you want to get across, I mean, please do. Well, one thought I have is, how about in the hotel room, the what was with the Bible? I forget exactly how that went in the book, but that really struck me as, I mean, you thought to mention it, so that must have struck you. Like, what happened in that room?
Well, I was feeling suicidal and I was really set on going through with it. And then I heard a knock at the door. So I put everything away because I didn't want whoever it was to see what was going on. Well, I went to see who had knocked on the door, and there wasn't anyone there. I shut the door and I turned around to find a Bible sitting on the floor right in front of the closet, which was where I had my rope hanging up. And I knew that it wasn't there before. I can't explain why it was there, and I'm not even a religious person. I didn't think too much about it, but it kind of scared me a little at the same time. So I put the Bible on the dresser and I went to sleep. Well, at some point I woke up and got out of bed to go hang myself. And the room was pitch black, so I couldn't see anything. But as I was opening the closet door, I kicked something. I reached down to see what it was, and it was that Bible again.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, the chances of it being there the first time was odd enough, but for it to happen again, it really caught my attention. I picked it up and opened it to a random page, and I can't remember exactly what I read, but it encouraged me to take everything down and just take myself to bed.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is there's you almost could write the first time that the Bible shows up as, okay, something weird, but then when it happens twice, when it's moving itself around, you realize, uh-oh. What effect has that event had on you? I mean, because I always dig things like that when they happen, when something happens, like with your phone, you know, before the journey started, then like with the Bible during it. Does that give you a sense of, you know, purpose? I mean, like when you're walking around today, like when you're living, how is that, well, does that affect you? Is that something that you are always aware of?
It lasted for a little while, but to be honest, it kind of just drifted away. But I think that when the time is right, if that time comes again, then I think it will happen again.
Mm. So that could be what stuck with you right there, is that, you know, when the time is right, it'll happen again.
I'm a little stubborn, I guess, but, you know, faith comes and goes.
Yeah, faith does come and go. And it certainly is nice when we don't have it and it shows up in a way that, you know, is impossible. And you realize, okay, this is cool. Well, thanks a lot, universe. I will, I'll get my act together and get back on the journey, you know. So I read the book, and it was one thing that struck me reading the book is how, like, the reaction people had to you thinking that you were homeless. I mean, like, maybe in a way you were, but not exactly homeless as people think about it. I mean, the journey's hard enough. You're facing the dark agenda every day. You're walking across the country, and now you've got people who, well, you have your tribe, which is helping you out. They're following you along on the blog, and they're showing up to help you out. And then also you have people, you know, looking at you like a homeless person. I mean, how was that? And then how'd that affect, like, your view on, you know, homeless people, which this country has, you know, an ever increasing number of?
There were several times when it made me angry, but I just tried to accept it because that's how society is. I'm not saying that's how society should be, but when you're in that situation, you have two options. You can either be mad about it, or you can shake your head and wish they could just live a day in your shoes. We shouldn't treat people poorly just because they're poor. Some of the best people that I've met were homeless. You know, we're all individuals on the inside with our own views and personality. It doesn't matter if you were born in a barn or with a silver spoon in your mouth. I don't know. I didn't let it bother me too much because, you know, I know who I am. But I do wish that I could have had a minute of everyone's time to explain myself. But most people wouldn't even give me that.
Yeah, I get it. I lived in Seattle for a couple of years, and there's, you know, a tremendous amount of homeless people there, and it was always, you know, a topic many times talked about is, you know, like, who are these people? Ultimately, they're anyone. It can happen. And then at the same time, you know, what is an organized society do about it? And, you know, I sat around in many, you know, many rooms full of, you know, well-intentioned people. And I like myself, I don't know what can be done about it per se. You know, it's just kind of like mystery that society faces. What do we do about, you know, homeless people? How do we help them? And can it be done at all? Is there really anything that society can do?
I think there is, but it would take a lot of work because you would have to work with each individual since everyone is different. All of their problems are going to have to be addressed on an individual basis. You know, one person's problem may be the fact that they just needed gas to get to work and it screwed their whole life up. But then you will have someone else who just wants to be homeless because they enjoy it. But at the same time, they would love to have a home, just not the responsibility that comes along with it. Do I think we would ever take the time to address everyone's needs and give them the help that they need per basis? Well, no, I don't. We could, but we won't.
Yeah, because, I mean, in the end, life is a individual experience, you know, journey, and is, you know, that it's unique to every individual. So yeah, it's kind of hard to just say, here's how you fix the homeless problem. No, there's as many homeless problems as there are homeless people, you know, even if some generalities can be made, for sure. Well, here's one. You mentioned, so you're doing a lot of book signings these days, and that's cool. And I'd ask, you know, what is doing a book signing like? And you mentioned you got a lot of questions. So what's a book signing like? I'm glad that they're happening. And then also, maybe what are some questions you get at book signings that you would love to just be able to say, you know, I did an interview where I really expounded upon that particular question, because it seems like you probably get asked a lot of deep questions or questions at a book signing, and you're like, well, we have like, you know, 10 seconds a person, or I've only got half an hour. I mean, what are some of the questions at book signings that you wish you could answer better, and that you could just, hey, I have an interview of, just point into an interview and say, I'll give you a little answer right here, but I cover it in more depth in this interview, like, check it out. So what's a book signing like, and then what are some questions that you'd love just to reference an interview?
It's pretty easy to get a book signing set up. I just call a library and ask for a book signing date, then I'll bring them a copy of my book that they put on the shelf, and then they set that date up about a month in advance to give people a chance to read the book. And that helps with the questions later on. The questions that I get from people who have read it are way more interesting than the questions that I get from people who haven't. If they haven't read it, I'm always asked why I did it, how long did it take, how much money did it cost, was I by myself, did I ever see a bear? You know, pretty much what questions you would expect people to ask someone who has written a travelogue. There is one question that everyone asks, though, and I hate it simply because I can't answer it.
Great one. I like that. Is there any question that you try to avoid? Yeah, let's ask that. Is there any question that you try to avoid, or questions?
Well, everyone wants to know where my favorite place was, and I just can't answer it. I had a love-hate relationship with everywhere that I've been. For some reason, people seem dumbfounded by the fact that I can't give them a simple answer, you know, and it kind of makes me feel bad. Like, I want to answer that question, but I just can't find it. And then for the people that have read my book, they always want to know more information about what happened in Carson City. Did you read that part?
You know, I did. And I mean, gosh, I wish I had a sometimes better reading comprehension. I remember Carson City. What happened in Carson City?
With the lights and the missing time, that whole thing?
I remember, gosh, I don't remember the details. I remember Carson City, but people ask about that a lot. And that one's hard to really expound upon because it's kind of all in the book, basically.
Yeah, and they asked me to elaborate on it, and I put everything that happened in the book. I can't take them any further than what they already know, but it's like they want to know if it really happened more so than wanting more details on it. And of course it happened, or I wouldn't have put it in there. It does sound far-fetched, but I didn't make it up. I almost didn't put it in there because I knew that I would get a lot of skeptics, although I didn't really expect this many people to read it either.
No, I get it. I guess I remember reading Carson City. Oh, I blasted through the book really quick, and I mean, there's a certain just rawness to it, and definitely, you know, a challenging honesty throughout it. But Carson City, I'm thinking, oh, it's kind of like I forgot where the bike disappeared, but I know that it did. Now I remember it's okay. Now, beginning of Nevada. So, okay, without maybe going deeper, just elaborate, like, what happened in Carson City? Like a quick summary, what was it?
Well, basically, I went to go camp in the mountains, and I saw these lights come up out of the hills across from where I was at. And then these three lights, they circled around Carson City and went down on the other side of town. Well, I didn't feel safe in the mountains at that point, so I went back down into the city and slept in a parking lot. I went back into the mountains the next afternoon to find a place to camp again. Well, I was sitting there eating my dinner when this man walked up from behind, and there was just something off about him. Well, he walked around this hill next to where I was sitting, so I got up to see if he was heading down into town, which was what I was hoping to see, but I didn't see him anywhere. Well, I went back to where I was sitting, and then I saw these three kids on the hill that was right across from where I was sitting, and then all of a sudden I blacked out, and it felt like I was stuck or something. I don't know. I remember I kept trying to turn over because it felt like I was on my stomach. And although I felt like I was rolling around, it never felt like I was upright. It's just really hard to try and explain how it felt. Well, eventually, I was able to turn over, and I woke up in a ditch about 30 miles on the opposite side of town, and then there was this red light that just shut off. So, at first, I thought I'd been kidnapped and mugged, so, you know, I kept feeling around to see if I'd been hurt or if anything was missing from my pack, but everything seemed to be there, and I didn't notice anything wrong with me until I started walking, and then I began to feel sick. It was about 3 a.m., I think, when I woke up in the ditch, but I wasn't able to make it back into town until it was close to dark because I kept having to take so many breaks.
Wow.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that wasn't the end of it. After I made it back to town, I got on the highway and began heading for California. While I was walking along, I noticed it had been dusk for a really long time. And I was wondering what the heck was going on because it wasn't getting dark. You know, it just felt really bizarre. And then I felt my phone go off, so I pulled it out and I realized that I had a message from someone and it said, "Good morning." And I thought maybe they were just messing around or something, so I didn't think anything of it. Then my phone went off a few more times, and it was more people telling me good morning. I felt really confused because the sun hadn't even gone down yet. My phone said it was, I think it was like 8 p.m. or something. But I was wondering if there had been some kind of like malfunction with my phone. So I turned it off, and I turned it back on, and all of a sudden it goes from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. And then I got just really dizzy, and I started throwing up. I mean, I didn't know what was going on. I mean, I was terrified, and I felt like I was going to pass out, but I didn't want to do it right there in front of everyone because I was still on the highway. It was like I hadn't even missed a step. So I made my way behind these bushes, and then I passed out for a few hours.
I remember that chapter now. I just was a little vague on it because it was so crazy. I do remember you mentioned that you got some video, and that video is out there to see. You posted that?
I did. I posted a couple of videos. I recorded the lights coming up out of the mountains and circling over Carson City, and I uploaded that to my Facebook page. And then I took another video when I woke up in that ditch and was telling everyone that something wasn't right, and I was telling them what all had just happened. And then I uploaded that one, and I recorded another video after the whole missing time incident, and I uploaded that one too. And a lot of people saw it, and you know, they were scared for me. And at some point, all of those videos were gone. You know, I had the videos on my camera, which had a Wi-Fi thing, so I could put the videos onto my phone, and then I uploaded them to Facebook from my phone. Now, when I realized the videos were deleted from my phone and Facebook, I decided to re-upload them again, and that's when I noticed that my camera was gone. But, hundreds, if not thousands of people saw it. You know, I've asked people from my page a few times just to make sure that they still remember it, and a lot of people have replied and said that they remembered everything.
Wow. And so it doesn't get any less creepy at any point in the story. So are those videos, is that all just gone, just disappeared now?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Wow. Well, definitely some unique experiences. I mean, it's so odd, but that's the kind of thing that, you know, when I'm out in the wilderness, that always just gets me is, and so it's terrifying, but then also it's just how often it happens. It's strange. Like when you're in the woods and you'll see somebody, like you're far away. You're not near anything. Like anybody who got there had to have a 4x4, you know? And you'll see, yeah, like somebody walking in a suit, or it's just some weird stuff like that. And it's just, it's so unsettling because you're like, this is just not possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you feel about it. But I don't know, it's even strange how I remember it. I mean, the way it feels, how I remember it, it almost feels like the memory was put there. I don't know how to explain that either. It's strange.
Yeah, I get it. And it can be unsettling. Yeah, it's like funny. I'm not sure if it was real or if it was fake. I don't know. Supposedly, it's real. There was a hunter, and he was up in his tree stand, and through the forest walked somebody in a clown outfit, you know, and he was walking up to the tree stand, and then he kind of just changed direction and then didn't, you know, he kind of walked by the tree stand, and the guy was like freaked out, and he was was going to aim his bow at the guy, you know, so all he's got is his bow, and there's this clown walking at you, and he's like, and you hear this guy going like, you know, don't you come near me, I'll shoot you. And I don't know, some people say it was fake maybe, but I don't know, just for me, the guy says it was real, and when he like turns the camera on himself and he's like, oh my god, yeah, to me this guy looked just terrified, you know. And so maybe there's somebody playing a joke on him or whatever, but the guy who was playing a joke on him put himself in a lot of danger if he did. And the guy of course was out in the woods where just, it's just a random person is not going to be there, you know. So that kind of thing is, I mean, the only thing that's freaky, I think actually that is weirder than when I was in the Pacific Northwest, did a lot of hunting, you know, in middle of Washington State. And sometimes you would get that feeling, people call it, they just call it the feeling. And you know, whether a person, you know, believes in Bigfoot or not doesn't really matter, I guess, per se. But sometimes when you're out there, and I've heard all kinds of people talk about this, it can be, I mean, from just all kinds of different people, and you just get this feeling, and it is just unsettling to your very bone marrow. You get this feeling, and you're afraid to look up. You don't even really want to look around, and it lasts for a bit, and then it passes. But I'm telling you, it's like you would swear that, you know, people attribute it to Bigfoot's looking at you or nearby or something like that. But it's not something you're making up, because I know plenty of people who were just so dreadfully boring, like they don't have an imagination. They don't they're not afraid of the woods at night or during the day, and they'll tell you, oh yeah, you know, I get that feeling too sometimes. It about makes you just break down, lose your mind.
Yeah, but you also have to consider that I had only a few unexplained incidents, but I was outside by myself for years, so for something to happen isn't really that far-fetched. How many people do you know who travel all over the country on their own, except for truck drivers? And most of the time, they can tell you something that you would find unbelievable.
Oh yeah, most people, 99% of people don't. Yeah, especially when you're in nature, you know, when you're outside of the paved environment. It is extraordinary how much weird stuff does happen once you step off the pavement. So, I mean, it's good to have that adventure and then write about it and tell people about it, because, yeah, I would say if people want those experiences, then yeah, go for it. They're out there. They're just slightly off the pavement. Get out there and that stuff, it happens. And it's I would say, I mean, if it's any consolation, I mean, to people who spend some time in the wilderness, like it's normal. You know, oh, something really weird happened. Lights in the sky, Bigfoot. Yep. That's.
I mean, yeah. I mean, things definitely happen. You know, just because we can't explain it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I need to get out of here though. I have a doctor's appointment.
Okay, and then where can people get a hold of you? I know it's like you're on Facebook, and then your book is on, I believe, Amazon. Mm-hmm. And then is there anywhere else people can find your stuff?
Well, I mean, pretty much everything that I have, they can find it through my Facebook page, Jake Does America. They can message me there, or, you know, I'm pretty easy to get a hold of.
Sounds good. And of course, we'll put links to all that in the show notes. And wow, well, it's been great talking to you. I mean, this is good. This was deep, good stuff. I mean, definitely expounds upon the book. I think this is good.
Yeah, I think it went pretty well. If you have any more questions, you know, feel free to send me an email or whatever. You know how to get a hold of me.
That sounds great. Well, thanks so much. I will talk to you again sometime.
All right. Thanks for having me.
You are listening to Radiant Creators, a collaborative project composed of people whose passion, purpose, and dedication requires forging their own unique path of empowerment and livelihood. A Radiant Creator isn't making a living, they are living.